All right, so we are red light, is that correct?
We're red light.
All right, cool. So, hey, this is Ben Tanzer from this podcast, Will Change Your Life. I keep forgetting I'm supposed to tell people that it's on iTunes and you should go listen there as well and rate it and rank it. Somewhere Brad Listy would be very mad at me for ignoring that. I am in the Third Coast Cafe in Chicago's Gold Coast neighborhood. I am with the Jeffrey Barkin. Hey, man, how are you?
Hey, man, it's good to see you.
You too. I mean, it's been a whole 24 hours since we last got together.
And that was our first meeting.
That was. I think it went well enough to constitute this one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking I have lived in this neighborhood for years, and I have somehow never interviewed anyone over here, so I'm very excited about that alone. But I'm equally or more so excited about all the amazingly cool stuff you have going on. I should say, I think we first connected because of your site monologuing and the various book reviews and other things you're doing, but I would love to sort of break that down. So I probably have 50 questions, but why don't you start with what monologuing is, what you want it to be, and then I'll pester you after that.
So monologuing is a collaborative website that I began as a graduate student at the University of Baltimore. It began extremely experimental, just a place to put some writing and get a few other writers in the program involved. And it's grown into a real site that is providing regular arts-related reporting, book reviews, movie reviews, theater reviews, music reviews, all that. And in the mix, I'm getting writers and artists to work together on collaborative multimedia projects. I see collaboration and multimedia as the future of reading in general, basically. And so I'm experimenting with making slideshows. I want to get a video component going on the site. But mainly I've connected writers as far away as Israel and New York, Kentucky and Hawaii. And they're banging out poetry projects, long-form fiction, short fiction, and they're doing it all together and having a visual or musical component in addition.
That's cool. So we should stress, I think you said this, but it's not even just that you hope people collaborate. You're not only encouraging it, you're also trying to make it happen.
Essentially, yeah. I'm the curator and the editor-in-chief of the publication. So once I make a connection, I leave it up to the artist and the writer to work together, to find their flow and talk about the project collaboratively. And once they have, you know, taken it to a first draft, second draft level, they give it to me, and then I will provide an editorial assistance. And ultimately, I'm the web designer who will put it up there on the site and publicize it.
That's awesome. So one question I was thinking of, which I didn't ask you about when we were offline, was, how do you phrase this? I mean, how do you decide who goes together? I mean, do you have some criteria in your head or any metrics, or you just think, I like this work, this reminds me of so-and-so, they work well together?
I sort of feel it out based on what I observe in people's styles. You know, if I take on a new writer into the network, there's a community on monologuing, and so I get a picture of what their past work is, what they've submitted. Each writer has their own way of getting in touch with me through this project, you know. I've picked up a lot of writers through a contest I ran now 2 years in a row, and we're going to be getting again, and Ben has volunteered to be one of the judges this year, so I'm very excited about that.
I'm excited too. See, we'll jump back to where you were, but either way, make sure we talk a bit about the contest. I love the idea of it.
Right. Well, I mean, the contest essentially in the beginning was a talent search. The winner, I offered them an opportunity to continue publishing through monologuing with me, and you know, and it's still, the site's still in its infancy, so it's free publicity to anybody that I take on, and I'm, you know, constantly raising the bar of quality writing that we want to have in the site, and there's an opportunity there.
That's cool. So, take a moment, we'll back up and probably open some other doors. The contest is, well, every contest is unique. My memory of how you talked about it was you offer people a series of prompts, right? Now, how does it kind of break down some of this?
Well, we've run two contests on monologuing. The first was the monologue contest, which is based on actually my work in progress. Is a novel about, takes place in New York, and in the novel, there's many Afghan and Iraq war veterans who come up with a game that they play to sort of get their thoughts out about the war, what they experienced, and the game's called Monologue, and the rules are that you get 2 minutes, 2+ minutes to lay it on the table, all your thoughts about a given topic, and everybody puts topics into a hat, you pick one, and then you have to go, and people in the room with you are required to listen and hear your monologue out. So I thought it would be fun to sort of try and make a version of this game that's applicable online, and for past 2 summers, every morning I'll get up for 5 days a week, and I'll post a new prompt. It could be something like socks, restaurants, just a one word or a funny line kind of prompt, and the response has been amazing. The first year we got close to 70 submissions, and the second year was, you know, a lot more. Cost $2.50 to enter, and I've done it in the past that you know, there was sort of a jackpot that I would split up towards the end of, for the prizes. But instead, this year I think it's going to be $50 for the first prize, $25 for the second prize, and $15 for the first prize. And whatever extra money I have will be for additional prizes so that people who participate will feel rewarded.
That's cool. So how do you pick the winner?
So last year I worked with a man named Menachem Kaiser. He's a nice writer out of New York.
My favorite name I've heard all week.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's done a big fellowship in Lithuania, and we caught up to, I was doing a bit of reporting on a project that he was working on, and that's how we got in touch, and we started, he volunteered to judge the contest with me. And this year, it's going to be a girl named Kelsey and Ben. Kelsey was last year's winner, and Ben has joined the team now, and we're happy to have him with us. And the three of us are going to judge the contest together. Basically, we're looking for, did you engage the prompt in a way that, you know, shows personality and style, and not it shouldn't be a mono, what did my wife call it, a mono vent. You know,
great.
Don't bring your person, your you know, don't use it as an opportunity to just say what's on, you know, your, what you're feeling. Engage it in a creative way, you know, and say something that, that people can relate to. There's a lot of examples on the site about, you know, past monologues that have done what we're looking for.
That's cool.
And the three of us, you know, it'll be a challenge to reach a consensus what we think is you know, a worthy winner. And also, the one thing I'll say, though, is make sure you follow the requirements, because last year we had a lot of submissions that were over 250 words, and that's not in the spirit of the monologue contest.
That's good to know, too, right? So there is a word limit,
exactly,
and that's important.
Yeah.
And the ones I saw seem to be have a lot of dialogue. Do you favor dialogue, or that's just...
No, not dialogue. That piece, the piece that won last year was a piece on customer service was the prompt.
Right.
And so Kelsey, who's judging the contest this year, did this great piece where, you know, people are calling on the phone and the person is commenting on, like, what the hell am I going to do to, you know, serve you now? And it was, you know, a lot of personality and emotion came through, and that you could really picture this person day in the life providing customer service and hating their job. And that's, it was hysterical the way she wrote it. And that is a winner in my mind.
That's awesome. So take a minute if you would, because there's a piece of the story I'm not totally remembering.
Yeah.
Kelsey won the contest. Did you then connect her with an artist?
Yes, I...
Remind me how that went.
I connected her with a girl named Lauren Elise. She's out in Hawaii right now. And they're working on a collaborative series of poems. And Lauren is a great painter. She mixes sort of old photography with you know, brush strokes over top. And it's coming out great. They've made three installments so far. Another one is on the way. And at first they were collaborating. Just Lauren provided a series of artworks that she had been working on, and Kelsey made she made poems to go with it. And now they've switched gears for the next half of their collaboration. And now I've just received a painting that Lauren was working on based on a poem that Kelsey had sent her. So it's going both ways, and it's really fulfilling
awesome.
The idea that I had behind monologuing the energy. It's been immensely fulfilling for me to watch, to help, you know, here and there with editing, and to talk about it with the two. It's a much stronger network suddenly.
It's cool, man. So are you also, did you mention me, you're thinking of actually organizing those in a more of a book form as well, possibly?
Yes, and that's the plan. Ultimately, we're going to put these together when we finally have enough content, go back and see, you know, how do we order all this? And certainly there'll be opportunities for reflection on how this whole thing came together, the way we collaborated over, I mean, this past year when this project started, I was living in Israel, and they were living in Hawaii, Kentucky, so it was, you know, we were strung out over time zones, over huge distances, and yet this thing is possible via the internet. We feel like we know each other, the three of us. We've talked once each, I think, by Skype, and it's just coming together really beautifully, and I think it will be a great book.
That's cool. So, you know, one of the things I think is interesting is you have sort of, for lack of a better phrase, international aspirations for this. On the other hand, I mean, lots of people say things like that. You really do have a wide-ranging network of artists, international and otherwise. I mean, how are you pulling that off?
I'm just committed to my network. I meet a person that says I think has the right stuff, and we go with it. And I think people realize the opportunity, you know. And I did an interview a while back that I was just saying that the key here is that we're channeling networks, you know, that what's great about a collaborative project online is that an artist has a network and a writer has a network, they share those two networks for the moment that they create something together. And, you know, and a few people, every time that there's a collaboration, a few people stick around and keep coming back to the site for more.
That's cool. So this next question is probably too obvious, but as you were talking, I was just struck by it. I mean, there's always been a sense that people can merge networks and collaborate on projects, but now in the age of social media, you said you don't even know these women that well. You Skype to them like one time, you email them. Even you and I had an email relationship until yesterday. I mean, how do you think social media is enhancing this? Is it obvious just that everyone can connect easier? And I mean, not just social media, but the internet and the world we live in now.
To tell you the truth, I'm just getting into social media now, actually. The site was, I fooled around with Facebook a lot this past year. You know, and when I would publish something, I would put it up on a couple of different Facebook places. But for me, it was, before I felt ready to engage social media, I wanted to make sure there was a lot of content, a lot of quality content on the site.
Sure.
And, you know, and I didn't feel confident about just putting something up the second that it's published. I didn't feel that was right for getting an audience. And amazingly, it's, you know, I see the value of it immediately now. The traffic on the site is much higher. Since I've created a Facebook page for the site, integrated those columns of, you know, Twitter and Facebook on the website. And I have, you know, a lot of evolving ideas about how we can use social media more interactively so that the writers have more opportunity to express different viewpoints, and it doesn't have to come down top down from the editor all the time. As for myself as the chief editor, I would like for there to be a community feeling that all the voices on the site are equal, and I'm working on that, and I think Twitter and Facebook may be the way to create that kind of media presence.
So do you see any clearly those are the benefits, do you see any drag either on your vision or what you hope to create that social media gets in the way in any way, or especially gets in the way, whatever the right word is?
Social media gets in the way? No, I don't think so. I think that there's a capacity for it to, or there's a potential for it to get out of control very fast. You know, I don't keep up with comments on the site. People leave comments, and I get, you know, a lot of spam on the site, obviously, from people traffic endless. And, you know, and there's no way to sift through the junk mail and the crap that's pouring in when you're just a one-man show. And but I don't think it'll be drag. I think it'll be more connective than anything else. And when we do this contest, you know, traffic on the site in past summers has been over 900 hits a day because I advertise it on Craigslist. And I think it'll be just even bigger this year because there's, first of all, so much more quality content on the site. And second of all, you know, Twitter and Facebook will help out.
That's cool. So outside of the contest, and you who are clearly doggedly pursuing people you get excited about, can people just submit work?
So I need to add a submission. I need to kind of conceptualize how I want that to work.
Right.
But I think we'll start having a paid submission field. And it'll be a way into the network.
That's cool. So, you know, it's funny. You are now the second person I've talked to in a row. Thank you, sir. Who has sort of, for lack of a better phrase, sort of an empire-building approach. Like, you're not, I'm struck, you're not just interested in cool content or interesting writers. You're really trying to build something. I mean, where do you think that comes from?
From myself?
Yeah.
Personally, I mean, I'm a self-published author. I just brought out my first book this year, or last year anyway, and what I see changing in the publishing industry across the board, not just in magazines and publishers, is this, you have to be fully competent to do it yourself, because it's not worth waiting around to be anointed by an outside press to do it, you know. So my vision is to create mechanisms where writers can find a little bit of support, but also conceptualize for themselves, you know, how they're going to go down this track to publish and to get their work out there. And So I see myself as a patron for the arts as well as an artist myself that's interested in publishing, and and this is about making that network available.
So that's cool to me, so then I'm going to make one more push on this question, because I'm really fascinated by it. Why do you think you particularly are interested in that? You could be merrily interested in getting your work out, trying to find outlets for your creative talents, your writing, but clearly you have a bigger idea that you can be a patron, you can create a platform. And where do you think that comes from? I don't think that's everybody. That's why I'm asking.
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, three times while we lived in Baltimore and I was still a student, my wife and I invited local artists to come to our apartment. We took down all the paintings on our walls and we said, it's your house for the night. It's open house gallery night. Bring your friends. We'll bring our network. We'll pool our resources here, and we'll have a great party, first of all, and second of all, hopefully someone will buy your work. It's an opportunity to show your work. And for us, I mean, for me, this is the writing life. It's all about who you find yourself in contact with. You know, it's great the way that Ben and I have met. I think that the more open you are to inviting people into your life and valuing their work on that, on whatever value you can give it at the time, you know, you create so much happiness, really. I mean, that's excitement, and that's what makes life interesting, and you never know where it's going to lead.
I love that. So really, part of it is really a vision for an artistic life. It's not, I want to be a content creator, or I'm driven by a platform. It's how you want to live and what you want to be surrounded by.
Exactly, yeah, and we saw eye to eye on that when we talked yesterday.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So take a moment. I'm going to back you up, which is also looking forward, but you mentioned your self-published book. My understanding is that book, there's probably two parts to this question. One is, that comes out of the MFA program you attended. Is it University of Baltimore?
Yes, the University of Baltimore has a three-year MFA program in creative writing and publishing. And basically, by the end of the program, you've compiled either a collection of short stories, a collection of memoirs, short memoirs, or poetry. And the job is that you've got to design a book for it. You do all the compilation on InDesign software, and they have a great computer lab, and you finish the program with a finished book. That's, published. Penguin couldn't do better. and then it's yours to have. Some writers publish just 100 copies. Some writers publish, I printed 625 copies in the first edition, and I sent all those copies to Israel last year. My wife and I had an opportunity to go abroad, and I was on book tour in Israel and Europe all year long. Sold out of the first edition, sold out of a second edition. There's about 1,000 plus copies out there now, and now it's time to turn back to the States and finish the job here.
Now, what's important about this is that would be a good top line story regardless, but now we're going to just mine it down a little bit. That's 1,000 copies, but book tour, I mean, it's interesting. You spent a year, and you were literally riding the trains pushing books, right?
Exactly.
Were you doing readings also?
I organized a little book signing at a winery up in the north of Israel, and I also did a reading at a cafe in a town called Zifron Yaakov. The book is a collection of short stories about a little bit based. I was a kibbutz volunteer in Israel for a year, and previous.
It's good to know. Even the stories have an Israeli basis, even though you were here and went back.
So previous to writing the book and going for the book tour, I was a kibbutz volunteer in Israel. Lived and worked and traveled all around Israel, as you know, worked doing digging irrigation trenches and trimming trees, palm trees, and so I experienced the culture of Israel and the conflicts of Israel, and I tried to keep an outside perspective the whole time, and take in other outside perspectives that were experiencing the country differently based on preconceptions that they had. And the short stories that evolved out of this experience, it's all fiction, and they really reflect a lot on the American relationship to Israel, and ultimately all the stories connect, so when you finish it's like a novel. And I worked with an Irish artist in the spirit of collaboration that monologuing is all about. I worked with an Irish artist, Diana Mueller, who she drew fabulous India ink and acrylic illustrations to go with each story, so each story has a different illustration, and it came out as a beautiful collection, and I just took it on the road with me, and I learned enough Hebrew that I could introduce myself and talk about the book in Hebrew, which was, what a challenge when I first got there to find my way. And Israelis were interested in this thing because it was an opportunity for them to look at themselves through somebody else's eyes, which, in a country that's becoming increasingly isolated from the world based on its foreign policies and the occupation problem that the people perceive, this was an opportunity to look outside the box.
It's pretty amazing. amazing. I mean, that part of the story to me is as important as any other part. Yes, you can write stories. Yes, you can package your own book, but you can also go to Israel and sell copies on trains and in wine country. That's pretty amazing. So you're now on to a novel, correct?
Yes. So the book, everything connects to my writing always somehow.
That's how I was going to go next. Good. You can jump in and grab that thread.
And I finished this thread in the sequel novel. It's a standalone piece, but I'm working on bringing it out this year. I'm going to self-publish it again, most likely. Work with Diana to illustrate it. And this book is called All the Lonely Boys in New York. And it's a story of a terrorist attack that took place March 6, 2008 in New York Square, New York Times Square. A guy drove a bicycle by Army Recruitment Center at 4 o'clock in the morning. They have this on the, you know, on video camera. He dropped off a bomb, blew a hole in the building. There's this eerie picture of Uncle Sam behind broken glass, and that's it. Never caught the guy, never...
And it's a real story. Like, when you said it, I had this very visceral flashback to reading about it.
Right.
In the
it shut down that part of Manhattan for the early morning of that...
Even though it was in the middle of the night, wasn't it?
It was at 4 o'clock, 4 a.m. in the morning, yeah. The only guy who saw it I spoke to was one of the street vendors who was just setting up, buying the first vat of coffee for the day, and he was an Afghani, actually. Nice guy. And so the book, though, it ties into, you know, the monologue poems I was telling you about before. It's about these soldiers who are back from the wars, and they are upset because in 2008, very quickly, an election that was supposed to be a referendum on the war is becoming only about the economy and the financial crisis. So they get together, they have a crazed professor, of course, who they're following, and and he's showing them an outlet for their anger and frustration with the way the country's going and the way this election is evolving, and they target this place as a way to recenter the country's attention on the war, the recruitment center. And to me, that seems like the perfect recipe for a great political thriller, and I took it away with it. And Miles is the name of the character, the central character in the short stories that I wrote. He's returned to New York City at the time that this plot is beginning to take shape, and he's determined to apologize to his best friend Ari, who he betrayed at the start of This Year in Jerusalem, the short stories. So that story is going to play out in the middle of this novel as well.
It's really exciting. That's cool. I like the idea that there's the connectivity. I know that's your thing, but also that this can pick up and run with it in a different way, a new way.
Kind of a surprising way, yeah. And if I could say anything about what the central theme is in this book,
please.
It's apology. I think what we saw in 2008 was a transition from the aggression of the Bush years, and Americans realized, how much we had possibly destabilized the world under our watch. And there was a motive for apology. And the book examines, is apology really possible on a personal level? On a, how do you make apology? This question is at the top of my thinking.
Why is that an interesting theme to you, do you think? Maybe it's purely a political reaction, but is that a theme of yours that you find fascinating in general?
Yeah.
How we apologize, what we need to apologize for?
Well, I think when you're writing a novel, there's this moment where all the things, all the plot events distill, and you just see, what this book is about? This book is about this. X, and you name it. And for me, that happened with this book, that I was realizing that, I got this character who really just wants to come home and say sorry, and he's a purist about apology. He wants, he's obsessed with getting back the friend that he had. He betrayed, you'll find out in the short stories how Miles portrays Ari. I won't give it away here, but he portrayed him in a way that's sort of irreversible, that, the only thing you can do is move on, but can you really in your heart forgive a person and accept an apology? And to have these two characters who are sort of trading impressions and of each other back and forth, and getting to know each other again on a different level and wondering how much they still care for each other.
That's so complicated. It's cool.
And I see it as a microcosm for a greater apology that I think the country was struggling with at that time.
It becomes a metaphorical discussion of what we owe, how we owe it. That's exciting. I should ask, I always ask, are you reading anything interesting these days? Does your reading follow your other interests?
So All the Lonely Boys is finished. It's just a matter of doing the work to get it ready for print. and published, and I'm working on now a trilogy that's really a thriller. So I've been into reading thrillers. I've actually finished. It's going to be. I finished the first book of the trilogy already, but it, you know, it's in a draft stage. And yeah, so I read. Who did I read this year? That was interesting. I read a good book about Chicago, the Lonergan, Studs Lonergan.
Oh yeah, of course.
Just finished that, and I'm reading Epitaphs for a Spy right now by Anderson.
I don't know that.
Just the writer kind of disappoints me in his. You know, he's got these innocent guys who find themselves suddenly in the you know, chasing assassins or spies.
Right, right, right.
And I like a more noir style where you know he's bad, but he has something redeeming about him. And,
you prefer the Tom Cruise characters to the innocent dupes.
Yeah, darker always better.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's cool, man. I always ask people.
Darker and dirty.
So fascinated by these things, you know. Is there any book that when someone says, dude, that book changed your life, do you come back to it? Is there a book you rotate back to?
Let's see. Ulysses, I studied in Ireland for a year, and Ulysses changed the way I write, absolutely. The way I think and perceive consciousness, absolutely. I was very interested in stream of conscious writing, but I'm not that dense. My writing you'll find much more accessible.
And you are not obligated to write like that, but that's good to know, because, I mean, I always say this, everybody has a different book. Everyone I talk to has a different book.
But I think for American writers, Henry Miller is really my favorite. He's certainly, while I was in grad school, this writer was, I mean, I had to read all of his work. I love that he kicked the romance out of everything and showed the most realistic world in writing I've ever read, I think.
It's funny. To me, it's a very American, certainly American male, although not strictly male, but that is a very American thing, which is, I'm going to strip it down to the basics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, and say it how it is, and do it fearlessly, and live by that standard. And I think that's the most honest thing I've read, anyway.
That's great, man. It's almost like a mission statement. One thing I have to ask you before we wrap up, and I know it's a perfect question to segue, because I know you also have to get on the road and drive like 700 hours to get home tonight. But one of the threads I think that comes up even on this, though I have talked to you previously, is that you have just lived a lot of places. You've been to school. Many places, you've traveled to many places, you've been in Israel, you've been in Ireland, I know you've been in other, you don't just visit, you've literally been living other places. I mean, what's the drive behind that? You don't seem very static to me. And for some writers, it's very beneficial to be static. You seem to be the opposite. You're as unstatic as anyone I talk to.
Let's see. I went to school in my hometown. I started at Cornell University.
See, as we talk about, that might be a prompt to get away.
And I love my hometown, and I love the people I grew up with. They ended up scattered all over the country and all over the world. So I've got friends everywhere from Ithaca that are just in interesting places. And that's in one, you know.
We should give an upstate New York shout-out, because I am fellow brethren.
Yeah, we found out we're neighbors. So I think when I was first starting to travel, I traveled a lot as a kid with my family, so I was familiar with a lot of places. Okay. They took us to Israel, they took us to England, they took us to Spain, all around the U.S.
So you grew up with it, which I think is significant.
Travel was a value in my family. That it was, if you spend your money on travel before you buy things for yourself, because there's just so much to learn about the world and see. And
it's about the Jewish thing too. My dad once said, I really don't want to chip in for your wedding, which he did anyway. Which my friend anyway, he goes, I'd be happy to give you all of that money so you can travel.
Right, yeah.
He's like, I'd much rather you go on some massive trip with the money.
And take something away you'll never forget. And so it was a value for me, and I distinctly remember the point in college where I was just so fed up being at Cornell, bored with Ithaca, and so I bought a ticket. I had a girlfriend at the time who was out in Hawaii. I bought a ticket out there, and I said, this is the start of the adventure portion of my life. And
but you knew it.
Yeah, that was my sophomore year, and from there, Hawaii, and then I had an opportunity out in Yellowstone National Park.
I
went cross-country, and then from there I went to Ireland to study abroad, and I guess I've just been traveling ever since. I'm adept at it, you know, I figured out what you need to travel. And
it's a lifestyle, too. People can get good at it. You seem like you're in it perpetually.
Yeah, but, you know, I think the way things are going, we're a little bit retired now, my wife and I, and so we're headed to New York. We're going to settle down there. It's the perfect place to bring out a book about New York, and I think I can continue marketing my work in a similar style there, really aggressively on the street, peddling books, and make a name for myself that way. And,
you do that, we have to do a follow-up interview. I want to hear how that goes.
Yeah.
I assume if you can handle Israel, which always sounds and feels like the most aggressive place in the world,
yeah.
New York will be, you know, like a kid's game.
You just speed up the talking and you got a New York accent.
Right. Well, and I should say aggressive, not mean or violent, just fast.
Yeah, you know.
In your face.
And I think New Yorkers are into that kind of thing. So,
they are. We are, they are, we know that.
And so, so I'll bring the next book out there and we'll see where it leads. And New York, I'm comfortable and I know the city there, so I think it's a great place to be for a couple of years.
Exciting, bro. So what haven't we covered? This has been good. We've done the wealth, the monologuing, the books, you know, your vision, but I want to make sure, I always say to people, these interviews are the opposite of I don't want you to hype your stuff. I love people hyping their stuff. Make sure we know, by the way, the link for monologuing. What is that?
It's http://www.monologuing.org, MONOLLOGING.org.
We'll link to that for sure. Awesome. When does the contest kick off? This will probably start afterward. I just want to make sure we get that.
I want to start at June 1st. I'm going to do the web work for it this weekend to get it started, and then it'll run from June 1st probably to the end of August.
Great. We'll post this right after that, so that's good to know. Any other, I'm trying to think, are there other links we need to be thinking about? I don't think there are, but remind me.
You can visit my website. It's jeffreybarkin.com to learn more about the book. The book tour, read some reviews of This Year in Jerusalem. Hope you will.
And so that short story collection is This Year in Jerusalem.
This
I realized I didn't get that name before. Okay.
Yeah, but it's a collection of stories.
And people can get the book there?
You can buy it off Amazon. It's the easiest way. I just work with them, and they do a really nice print job of it. And it's a beautiful book, like I said, with all the illustrations that Diana has done. You should also check out, at the end of the book, there's a little office note that explains how I met Diana Mueller while I was studying abroad in Ireland.
Remind people, the artist who illustrated it. Beautiful illustrations.
And you can visit her website as well via monologuing, but I think it's brushwoodstudios.com, but I can confirm that for you.
Okay, we'll track her down. That's cool.
Yeah.
Good, man. I just want to make sure we don't leave anything out. So we're covered.
Really beautiful artist. And she's actually, her whole family is artists, so...
You told me that.
You can browse a lot of work, and it's an interesting story at the end of the book that is more personal about my experience traveling.
But she actually, I don't think this discloses anything, but you actually got to stay with her and her family, right?
Yeah. I didn't
blow the story today. There's more to it, I hope, but I love that
part. We'll cut it off then.
Okay, we're going to stop right there. Good, well, look at it. Well, also, we can stop everything right there. I just want to thank you for making the time. I have found, you know, the recent relationship, but very inspiring to me. I love your sort of go-gettedness and the hustling and the writing and the connecting. And I really love, too, on the site, I know you're building out your universe, but you've already got like a collection of players and their photos are there and their descriptions and they're all interesting and exotic. And you know, I think that's unusual. It's a very cool part of what you're doing, which is you're building sort of your own performing set of players.
Right.
You know, it feels like a P.T. Anderson movie or something.
One thing I would say is that the publication is also evolving to help other starting presses, you know, that Ben works for Curbside Splendor, and, you know, it was a publisher that I came across in my search for a publisher, and I realized, you know, this is a small press bringing out books, good books, quality books. I want to say, and I want to help them, and I want to be a critic there. So I've made the site available, and when publishers publish books, small presses publish books, they should totally send free copies to my reviewers, and we'll get the word out. We'll work together and we'll build partnerships.
You just reviewed Four Fathers, which I'm honored to be part of, which is a mutual friend of ours, Cobalt, and Andrew Keating, who is a sort of classmate of yours. We can give Andrew a shout out here.
Exactly.
Participants, which I didn't know. I even better understand what he was doing, because when I first met him, he asked me if I would help, you know, if I would blur participants and look at some of the stories. And so now I better understand what he was up to by talking to you about it.
Right. So
that's good, man. The web
all coming together.
It's coming together.
And, you know,
week for that.
And ultimately, my goal is to make small presses competitive with the big presses. I don't see why it small presses shouldn't have an equal foot in the door, getting books into bookstores, providing access to readers, and having a bigger network that people value.
There's not a finer point that you could make or we could leave off on than that.
Sure.
Okay, then, with that, we'll just stop talking. We'll sound like we're editing. We'll post this. I'm really excited you made
it. Wait for the static.
always waiting for the static, as long as we are not actually static ourselves.
Right.
All right, awesome.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Not at all, brother. This was terrific.
Great. Bye.
Bye.